North Korea as a prime opportunity to convey through the UN officials that North Korea is ready to go to war tonight.
Tensions continue on the Korean Peninsula even as a top UN official visits Pyongyang. It's Friday, December 8th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Remember, you're part of the program. Join us on any of our VOA Asia social media platforms. Also ahead, Australia's parliament votes to legalize gay marriage. We'll meet a Rohingya who is building a new life in upstate New York. And the Winter Olympics are about 2 months away, but do South Koreans care? That's all on today's VOA Asia. We're glad you're with us on this Friday. North Korea says a large joint military drill between South Korea and the United States has made an outbreak of war on the peninsula an established fact. According to a statement issued through state-run KCNA news agency, a spokesman said, "The remaining question is, when will the war break out? We do not wish for a war, but shall not hide from it." The regime is issuing the warning as a U.S. B-1B aerial bomber flew over South Korea as part of Vigilant ACE. That's this week's joint U.S.-South Korean aerial exercise involving hundreds of warplanes, including an unusually large number of the latest generations of American stealth fighter jets. It also came as a senior U.N. diplomat, Under Secretary General for Political Affairs Jeffrey Feltman, held meetings with North Korean Foreign Minister Ri Yong-ho in Pyongyang Thursday. Tufts University Korean Studies Assistant Professor Sung Yoon Lee told VOA that despite the heightened tensions, the North Korean rhetoric is typical bluster.
Right now, it makes sense for North Korea to ratchet up the rhetoric again and to create war paranoia because you have, right now as we speak, a high-ranking UN official visiting North Korea, which is a rare occasion, the Undersecretary General for Political Affairs, number two man at the UN, is in North Korea. The last time such a person of such position was in Pyongyang was back in February 2010. What that means is North Korea has a prime opportunity to convey through the UN official to the U.S. and to the world that North Korea is ready to go to war tonight. Why? Because of repeated threats by the Trump administration. Therefore, the messenger will be inclined to tell the world that the U.S. should de-escalate as to thwart war, which basically means making more concessions to North Korea.
Sun Yung Lee of Tufts University does not see Feltman's trip as a prelude to U.N. mediation, but rather as setting the stage for another possible provocation. Lee said that 1 month after Feltman's predecessor, Lynn Pascoe, visited North Korea in 2010, Pyongyang was blamed for destroying a South Korean corvette and killing 46 sailors. He said it is quite possible that before his traditional New Year's Day address, Kim Jong-un will engage in yet another provocative act. These are among the top Asia stories trending on VOAnews.com. Indonesia slams American embassy move to Jerusalem. Australian Parliament allows same-sex marriages. Cambodia offers largely muted response to U.S. travel ban. Southern Nepal votes in second and final round of elections. And Thai court agrees to hear experts in an academic's case. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the VOAnews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Australia's parliament voted on Thursday to allow same-sex marriage across the nation, following a bitter and divisive debate settled by the government polling voters in a much-criticized ballot survey that strongly endorsed change. The legislation passed with a majority that wasn't challenged, although five lawmakers registered their opposition to the bill. Australian Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull told the lawmakers the move was long overdue.
What a day for love, for equality, for respect. Australia has done it. Every Australian had their say and they said it's fair, get on with it. And the Parliament has got on with it and we have voted today for equality, for love. It's time for more marriages, more commitment, more love, more respect. And we respect every Australian who has voted, those who voted yes and those who voted no. This belongs to us all. This is Australia.
Opposition leader Bill Shorten told members of Parliament the vote represents a new future for all Australians.
Australia, we are going to make marriage equality a reality in minutes. The Australia of tomorrow begins with what we do today. At long last, LGBTIQ Australians will be equal under the law.
The public gallery of the House of Representatives erupted with applause when the bill passed to change the definition of marriage from solely between a man and a woman to a union of two people, excluding all others.
Third reading, a bill for an act to amend the law relating to the definition of marriage and protect religious freedoms and for related purposes.
The vote set off celebrations outside the Parliament building, with several same-sex couples saying they plan to get married or plan to renew their vows now that their marriages would be recognized. The Australian Senate passed the same legislation last week, 43 votes to 12. After royal assent and other formalities, the law will likely take effect in about a month, with the first weddings expected about a month later. The government has appointed a panel to examine how to safeguard religious freedoms once gay marriage is a reality in Australia. Marriage equality was endorsed by a 62% of Australian voters who responded to the government-commissioned postal ballot. Happening now in Asia, a judge in Hong Kong delayed sentencing of student protest leader Joshua Wong in contempt of court case stemming from 2014's so-called umbrella movement. The 21-year-old Wong has been out on bail while he appeals a prison sentence in a separate case. A high court judge adjourned it to an unspecified date. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're happy you're with us on this Friday. I'm David Byrd from Washington. According to the United Nations, more than 500,000 Muslim Rohingyas have fled persecution in Myanmar, also known as Burma, in the past few months. Many of the refugees are living under difficult circumstances. But VOA's Saba Shah Khan visited Syracuse, New York, to meet a man who is putting together his life from scratch.
Qasim Dil Muhammad's story is no different than that of many other Rohingyas. He worked as a fisherman with his family members. He says the police occasionally beat them until one day they beat Qasim so hard that his family feared for his life.
Burmese government won't let them earn a living. It would be difficult for me to even provide food. I have a mother, a sister. See, when I talk about them, my eyes fill up with tears. This is the reason I could not take it anymore. This is the reason I left for Bangladesh and then for Malaysia. The reason why I left my country.
Qasim says he fled to give his children a better future.
School education is free for most people in Burma, but not for Rohingya.
Qasim says this is the reason that 90% of Rohingyas are not educated. They're considered foreigners in their own country because of their different appearance and religion.
Burmese government is Buddhist and it is military government. So what they do is they rape 10-year, 12-year-old little girls. Why? Because they're Muslims. Because they cannot tolerate Muslims. Yes, they recently burned my house, my wife's father and his house too.
The Myanmar government denies allegations of rape, murder and burning, but human rights organizations have documented numerous such atrocities in recent months. Qasim says he fled to Bangladesh and then applied for international refugee status because he says that in Bangladesh and Malaysia, it would be very difficult for his children to get admitted in a school.
I wish to highly educate my children, so one becomes a doctor and one a teacher. I will make money by the will of God.
Qasim's children, Asma and Azizullah, are doing well in school, but they are aware of what is happening back home. Since attacks on Myanmar police by Rohingya extremists in late August prompted a violent crackdown that has seen more than 600,000 Rohingya flee to Bangladesh.
They're like cutting the people and gun, like they have the gun, they shoot the people.
Felicia Castricone is the local program director for Catholic Charities. She says the Rohingya are very scared when they arrive in Syracuse, and then as time passes, they gain confidence.
They hadn't had that acceptance in Burma. Fortunately, we had some Burmese Muslims here who were very welcoming of the Rohingya, and in general, the whole Burmese population here who came here as refugees themselves were very welcoming of the Rohingya.
Qasim showed me his children's green cards that just arrived, but he has not forgotten his family, now living in Bangladesh.
I miss them every day. I have not forgotten them. Every day when I eat, I say prayers 5 times a day. I raise my hands to God and pray to make things better for Rohingya, for all Rohingya people.
To fulfill his dreams, Qasim has chosen the path of hard work. He works 3 jobs and recently bought this car that makes it easy for him to get to work. Sabah Shahan, VOA News, Syracuse, New York.
For more on that story, visit our website. You're listening to VOA Asia.
Hi, my name's Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings, your request and dedication program here at the Voice of America. 1500 Universal, Monday through Friday, we're there for an hour playing your favorite music. You can send an email in and request your favorite songs by your favorite artist. You can also phone in as well. We have great contests and surprise guests from time to time. Border Crossings, every single day during the week at 1500 Universal, here on the Voice of America.
This news alert from VOA Asia. Survivors gathered Thursday at the site of the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor to remember fellow servicemen killed in the early morning raid 76 years ago. More than 2,300 servicemen were killed in the assault carried out by Japanese airplanes. Nearly half were on the USS Arizona. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for top stories and great features to see and share. This is VOA Asia. The Winter Olympics in Pyeongchang, South Korea, get underway in just over 2 months. This week, the IOC's Olympic Games Executive Director Christophe Dubé said that ticket sales are improving, especially since the Olympic torch relay began in South Korea.
We discussed about the ticketing situation, which is improving. They were qualifying themselves the period after the arrival of the torch as the boom up. And it's true that we can see now a big difference in the ticket sales on a daily basis, which is really reassuring.
However, even with the optimistic report, organizers say that about half of the 1.1 million tickets have been sold. Low numbers in recent months have been a source of alarm, with organizers deciding to enforce a plan to mobilize local governments and schools to boost sales. For some perspective on the situation, I talked with George Haley, the director of the Center for International Industry Competitiveness and a professor of marketing and international business at the University of New Haven in Connecticut. He told me that several factors, from North Korea to the weather, have combined to hurt ticket sales.
North Korea has signed a treaty not to cause problems during the Olympics. But nobody hears about that. All they hear is that the continuous belligerence between especially President Trump and the United States and North Korea itself. They've also had in the region around the venues for the Olympics an outbreak of bird flu. But that's also caused worry. Another problem they've had, they are counting on venues which haven't really been developed as tourist destinations, whether it's for winter sports or anything else. And there's been a shortage of hotel space, and even the weather has really hit them. In the main arena for the opening ceremonies, because of budgetary constraints, they didn't put a roof on it. And they recently had a music concert there they had 7 cases of hypothermia they had to treat.
Andy Spaulding is a professor at the University of Richmond's Law School, specializing in international anti-corruption law, and the lead author in the Olympic Anti-Corruption Report, Brazil and the Rio 2016 Games. He told me that the Korean political scandal last year and the role of several large companies such as Samsung has colored Koreans' perspectives on the Games.
Oh, I think there is some reason to think that the enthusiasm for the Games in South Korea is not as high as the organizers would have liked or planned. And there are a number of reasons for this. One is that the Games have certainly been tainted by corruption scandals. Samsung is a principal sponsor of the Games, and its de facto leader has been convicted of bribery. While bribery scandals in Korean business are commonplace historically, cultural norms in South Korea are changing now, and tolerance for this kind of thing is going down significantly. So I think there is a more of a stigma attached to bribery now in South Korean culture than there was in past decades.
Ira Rosen is an assistant professor at Temple University's School of Sport, Tourism, and Hospitality Management in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. He told me that even with a new high-speed rail line in place, there is a dearth of internationally recognized hotel rooms around Pyeongchang, which makes overseas travelers reluctant to spend the money to travel to the Olympics.
So I think people are a little more leery traveling to areas that are a little off the beaten track, as it were, as you know, the South Korean market is certainly for the European traveler, for the North American traveler. It's a pretty much unknown market. And again, I think people are leery about risking the kind of money that it takes to travel to an Olympics Games with that risk level in mind.
Ticket sales have also been hurt by a lack of a real winter sports culture in South Korea. Organizers also say that Koreans tend to buy tickets for major events at the last minute. Games organizers are also counting on ticket revenue to meet operating expenses for the Games. But George Haley of the University of New Haven says that even if they don't, the South Korean government will make sure that all issues are handled because of its larger regional political goals.
They view their Winter Olympics as the beginning of a series of athletic events through which they hope to start promoting greater peace and amity between the Asian countries, reducing tensions between the different countries. And to them, this is a very important undertaking.
The Winter Olympics get underway in Pyeongchang, South Korea, February 9th, 2018. We have this news alert from VOA Asia. Vote counting is expected to start later today in Nepal's elections. Millions of people in southern Nepal voted Thursday in the final phase of mostly peaceful elections for members of national and provincial assemblies. They are seen as Nepal's final step in its transition to a federal democracy. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Imagine that one day you board a bus and it just starts moving. It obeys all the traffic signs and it stops at the signals, but it has no driver. Well, that's the future happening right now at a business park in Northern California. VOA's Carolyn Prasuti takes us on what's probably your first ride on a driverless shuttle bus.
Curiosity got the best of the Dupins. They had to get on board.
I want to get one for my house. Just to get to the mailbox.
It's a shuttle bus with doors and seats, but no brake pedal or steering wheel or driver. A thrilling experience for someone who just moved to California from the car capital of the U.S., Detroit, Michigan.
I love adventure, so if something were to go wrong, it'd probably be more interesting.
I would ride in it, yeah, for sure. I don't think it goes very fast, does it?
Let's take a ride and see. The shuttles can go about 16 kilometers with GPS unmanned navigation on an electric battery-powered motor. It's a smooth ride, but jarring for the brain, since the landscape moves, but no one drives. The Bishop Ranch Business Park wants to have 20 of these in 10 years. The driverless vehicles will carry 12 commuters to 600 individual offices. They'll replace these gasoline-powered buses.
Now, we don't have enough resources to widen our public right-of-ways or to improve them in such a way that we can get that kind of efficiency. So autonomy is the real answer for congestion, particularly on our freeways.
The buses, built by a French company, cost $250,000 each.
The shuttle is equipped with numerous sensors, giving it 360-degree vision, so that when something walks in front of the shuttle, it stops.
It's like a radar. So it detects all the objects in about a 200-meter radius on top, and it's got sensors in all four corners of the vehicle there, and then it also has sensors in the front. And that windshield wiper that you see in the back is not for the windshield because it's too small. It's for that camera.
Randy Iwasaki, who led the regulatory effort to get the shuttles, says the bus has one more hurdle to pass before the public can actually take a ride. Organizers say success will be realized when people get on and look down at their cell phones, treating a driverless shuttle just like a normal ride.
We're back.
Carolyn Pursuti, VOA News, San Ramon, California.
And to be sure to check out video of that story, visit our website, voanews.com. Are you a sports fan? Then you know that a knee injury can end an athlete's career. Our knees take a lot of stress, but when they are injured, there are only a few options to repair them. For many people who are not able or not ready for a full knee replacement, there are now new biological options to reduce pain and improve function. Carol Pearson tells us how.
Knees are the largest and most complex of our joints, and they really get a workout, whether you're a professional athlete or not. Take Monica Bates. She's marched in the University of Missouri alumni band for years, and for years she had trouble with her right knee. She was afraid her pain was permanent.
I felt like all hope was lost. I was going to be sad and bent over and limping the rest of my natural life.
People of all ages can suffer knee damage. Teenage girls are particularly vulnerable during their growth spurt in puberty. Researchers have found that certain leg muscles at this age need extra help getting stronger. Exercise can help, but sometimes surgery is the only solution. Doctors can perform a complete knee replacement with metal or plastic parts, but there are other procedures as well. Bates qualified for BioJoint, a procedure developed at the University of Missouri.
She's too young and too active for the artificial complete replacement, so fortunately now we have BioJoint for those patients.
BioJoint uses donor tissue and bone to replace a person's own damaged knee. The goal is to eventually stop using metal and plastic.
Instead of bringing in a man-made material that's our best effort at replicating what nature or God has given you, we're bringing in the exact same material, so it's a transplant.
The technique can be used on other joints as well. And there's another procedure, just for knees, that uses the patient's own cartilage.
Through a small scope procedure, we take your cells from a non-essential aspect of your own knee so they won't cause harm, and then we bring it to a laboratory and we actually expand and multiply your own cells and implant them back in.
The cells are put on a scaffold or a matrix that's cut to size to patch over the defect in the knee. It's much like patching a pothole in a road. Doctors also emphasize that people can protect against knee damage by warming up before playing sports and by keeping off extra weight that puts additional stress on your knees. As for Monica Bates, it's been more than a year since her surgery, and she's still marching for her alma mater, only this time, pain-free.
I am so able to do so many things. That's the part I love about it. Monica's back.
Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You can get our program on iTunes and SoundCloud. Download our podcast and take VOA Asia with you. You can find us at voanews.com. And let us hear from you on our VOA Asia Facebook page and by email, voaasia@voanews.com. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Aydin Okut. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Enjoy the rest of your day.